Welcome to Game Store Profits, where we talk about God, gaming, and groups. I'm your host, Daniel Fisher, here with our fearless leader, Mike Perna.
I'm not even going to comment anymore. Hi, Daniel.
How are you doing today, Mike?
Oh, fantastic.
That's good. We are also joined by the esteemed Mr. Jeff Romo.
Yeah, I'm pretty steamed.
Yeah.
Oh, did you say esteemed?
Yes, sir.
Esteemed. Okay.
You know what grinds my gears?
Let me roll back my comment and say that no, I'm absolutely happy and enthusiastic to be here. What's going on, Daniel? How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Yeah. It's Wednesday night that we're recording this. I mean Monday morning when you get it first thing fresh. We do it
fresh
live.
Off yeah, the recording. Yeah, yeah. Because we don't make any mistakes. It just records live.
Yeah.
And it just blends together in the magical electric ether.
It's our internet pops meet together and it just blends it all together into one MP3 and sends it to all the services.
Pipes, internet.
Yes.
Yeah.
You shut your mouth.
What episode are we on? Is it 148? 149?
We're 149.
149.
Yes.
There we go.
These people, these ingrates, don't understand the work that I do to make us sound actually intelligible.
Hey, man, it's a lot of work to make me sound intelligible.
It's true.
Indirigible.
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 With adjudication.
All right. Before we've completely lost everybody in our audience, how about we actually start talking about things?
Okay.
Sure. Why not? Let's start with Mr. Mike. How's it been going, dude?
It's going well, other than the fact that I had ridiculous technical issues, which seem to have actually worked themselves out. I've been hammering away at my technology. It's actually working. It's working now better than it has in months. So I've got that going for me. The downside was that pretty much everything technological has been delayed. Emails have been delayed going out. Videos have been delayed getting produced. Bard and Bible still hasn't come out yet at the time of this recording. I'm hoping that I can get that recorded and burned by the time we get done with this episode.
I'm surprised you were like able to jump on here. I mean, because every single message in the tavern was like, you know, checkity check your disc, you know, and it literally
came together this morning.
You know,
power of God.
I have a way to fix your computer really quick.
How's that?
Watch a cracking unboxing.
One of these days, you need to actually like get in touch with that guy and do an interview cracking unboxing.
Oh man, we could have him on the show. I'm pretty sure he'd do it.
Oh, it's quite possible. He seems like a lovely gentleman.
Yeah,
he does. Be kind of hard to ask questions of him, I think. Be all over the place. But anyway, Mike, what the heck you been doing other than checking your disc?
I've been enjoying an increase in play of Ashes.
Nice.
Which is always fun. I've finally now gotten some plays together for my, what's it called? The new expansions that somebody wonderful at Board Game Geek. I know I mentioned it before. I know I've put it up in the tavern. But apparently Board Game Geek has this thing called Pay It Forward. And apparently somebody nominated me to receive the blessing of this. And I got a random message on Board Game Geek saying, "Hey, I know you don't know me, but this person put you on this list and we want to give you things from your wish list." And I said, "Thank you." And, I got two of the expansions. So I can finally say that yes, Rin, I can't remember Rin's last name off the top of my head. Rin is downright amazing. And I love that man. And his sly swagger, his sly swagger and his frost bears and his ice golems. He's
golems.
He's my boy.
Well, talking about free stuff, I received a package in the mail today from an esteemed colleague of ours by the name of T.R. Knott.
Yes.
Yes. It had four board games in it that I got to add to my beautiful collection. And I just want to give a shout out to TR. Thank you, TR. It was wonderful. I love him. He sent me a copy of Dead Panic, Warhammer Disc Wars, Mystic Veil, and Infernal Contraptions. And I know he sent Mike some stuff because it's what happens when people cull the herd. We get the leftovers.
That's what happened with me with Luke. You know, I mean, that's how I ended up with what? Armada, Netrunner, Lord of the Rings, Pathfinder.
So, okay, we're throwing out a bunch of titles, forgetting the fact that not everybody who listens to us is as neck deep in the hobby as we are.
Yeah.
It's a whole bunch of games that were like super awesome. There you go.
So Daniel, say a little bit in all honesty, one, I haven't received mine yet, the U.S. Postal Service being what it is. So I won't even bother talking about my games because we can talk about that in a later episode, because I only vaguely know about the titles that he sent me because I've seen them, I've heard about them, but I don't know what they are. I'm just going on what I think they're going to be like, but you actually have them in-house.
Yes.
So share a little bit about the titles that TR sent.
Well, I will give you a little bit about – I don't know all of them yet because I just haven't had a chance to go through them as much. Infernal Contraption looks to be some sort of deck-building game. And I haven't looked at it yet, but you pretty much build a contraption based upon the cards that you get. And Mystic Veil is another game where you have these clear cards and you layer them upon top of each other to get different effects. The ones that
Mystic Veil is really intriguing the way they do deck building.
Yeah, one of the things that's cool about it is the cards remind me of Gloom. I love that card game where they're clear, and when you lay the cards down, it's effects. But the ones that really stuck out to me is Dead Panic. First of all, it's a Castle Panic variant with zombies. Two of my favorite things, Castle Panic and zombies. And then Warhammer Disc Wars, which is a Fantasy Flight game from when Games Workshop did things together. You're pretty much playing Warhammer Fantasy instead of miniatures. You have these little discs. So what you do is you move the disc around, but you do it not by like measuring out, but by flipping them over. So this disc will get like three flips. They're all different sizes. So you flip it three times and then it's at its final resting place, which is pretty cool. So it's like a really light version of Warhammer Fantasy.
Well, it's always good too to get more titles, because I know that when you started with us, you basically had a handful of games.
Yes.
And you've been steadily building up. So it's nice that you're able to get a few more titles into the library.
Yes.
Especially because it seems like at least Disc Wars is kind of different than the other stuff that you've got. It's kind of, it's like my first miniatures game without actual miniatures.
Yeah.
Baby's first Warhammer.
It's going to be fun with the kids, the younger kids, like 10 and up, I think, that they get a taste of a little bit of strategy building there with it. And, you know, I do have some younger strategy kids games like Battlesheep, which if you ever get a chance to check that one out, I think it's by Blue Orange. And pretty much you have a hexagonal board and you've got to block other people from gaining more pasture. And whoever has the most pasture at the end wins.
It's always good to get that out there, especially because I know that you tend to be your audience tends to be more on the younger side.
Yeah, here recently, because I've been doing a lot of, we've been having Bible studies at church, and I volunteered for childcare, and my wife's like, why would you do something like that? And that's when I pulled out a big box of kids' games. It's like, because I get to play these.
It's an excuse to play my games.
That's a pretty good reason.
Yeah. I will tell you tonight, we did play Ultimate Werewolf, and one of the youngest ones.
Let's hold off on that.
Okay.
I know you wanna build on that, and I wanna make sure that we get some time talking about, because I think there's a lot to what you're about to say. So consider this a preview
for
later on in the episode. But I can also say one thing that I've gotten. I don't have the games coming from TR. I'll tell you when I get them. But one thing that did arrive is from our good friends at Button Shy. I have Universal Rule, which I'm very excited about. I haven't played it yet, so I can't give a full report. But like every Button Shy game, Universal Rule is a wallet game. I don't remember exactly how many cards are in it, but, you know, as compact as it is, It's this tiny little thing that literally fits in your pocket, but it really is supposed to give a 4X feel, which I love a good 4X game. But the problem is that they're usually giant. The one that I have that is most well known in the 4X genre is Eclipse. And I'm going to try. I always forget one or two when I do it. So I gave Daniel a hard time for skipping through a piece of terminology without, you know, actually describing it. So here we go. 4X, four as in, and the letter X. 4X means exploit, expand, explore. I told you I always forget one. Whatever. And
X-ray. No, that's not it. No, that's
I'll remember it later. I'll leave a space here because future Mike's going to come in and say what the other X is, because I always forget one. No matter how many times I do this, I always forget one. So future Mike can throw the other one in there.
Future Mike also has the benefit of foreknowledge of what notes he needs to have written out in front of him when he's recording, so he doesn't look like a dork. Hey kids, Future Mike here to give you the four X's in 4X gaming. They are explore, expand, exploit, and the one I forgot before, exterminate. It's so much easier when I can just read them from notes. While I'm here, and still being all future-y and stuff, Mike's going to say he'll hopefully get this played at the next game day. That didn't happen. Hopefully I'll be able to remedy that and give you guys a full report. That said, I'll get you guys back to your regularly scheduled podcast. Future Mike out.
Yeah.
But it really is a neat little game because you're basically trying to put little planets down, like you're colonizing these planets, and all they are is cards, and the planets actually give you its production, it gives you battle, like you have a fleet on that planet, and it also gives you the obviously the value of your planet. You can upgrade planets, you can play out a bunch of them, and the goal is to try and reach a certain number of points. And combat is really interesting because, you know, in a big 4X game, you've got dice and miniatures and moving guys and supply lines and all this stuff. But in this little card game version of it, you basically have a system where one person says, here's my planet. I'm attacking this planet that you have. And you have the other guy is basically going to say, they choose whether they're going to play cards down or not to get into the fight. Now they can back either the attacker or the defender. And then once they've played all their cards, you have the opportunity to like economically back them by basically throwing in credits into the fight. And it's really cool because you basically have tokens. And so you blind bid these tokens and then you say, I'm with the attacker or the defender. Whoever has the most points wins the battle. If the defender, loses, pretty much, if their planet is upgraded, it gets knocked back down to what it was before. And if it wasn't upgraded, it's eliminated. So there's a lot of the same stuff. You're trying to make alliances. You're trying to convince people to back you instead of the other guy. There's a lot of the same stuff that you get in a 4X experience. And it's really this neat little wallet-sized pocket game, which is a lot shorter. So I'm really looking forward to getting this to table. I have a game day this Saturday, and I'm definitely going to bring Universal Rule because I want to get it played. And hopefully I'll be able to have even more of a full report on that after Saturday happens. I'm happy with it. I'm very excited. There's another game that I have coming from Button Shy, which is a two-player game. And I think that's due maybe next month, maybe. And when that comes, like, I love what Button Shy does, and especially as a guy who always tries to have at least one game on hand at all times. Button Shy games are great just because they literally fit in my pocket.
Well, yeah, I need to look at those too, because that's pretty cool. I usually try to keep at least one die in my pocket at all times, because I can always pull out a game of Pig with the kids when we get bored, so.
That's good travel games too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can bring them anywhere. Like you said, pocket size. So,
yeah, and it'll be fun also on Saturday because I was talking with a bunch of the kids on Sunday, and I'm like, hey, you guys coming out? And they're like, yeah. And we started talking about this, that, and the other thing, and I brought up Armada because I forget what sparked it. I think we were just talking Star Wars because we're nerds. And I said, yeah, I don't often bring Armada out to events unless somebody specifically requests it because I don't have all the nifty storage solutions that a lot of war gamers do. I just don't have that at my disposal. So it becomes really obnoxious to transport these little miniatures with their fragile little plastic bases. So I don't bring them out unless somebody asks. And so literally as soon as I said that, two of the guys are like, I'm asking.
Right.
So I'm now hounding them every day. Are you actually coming? Are you actually coming to the event? I'm not going to lug these stupid things out there if you're not going to be there. Because I love Armada. Armada is definitely something that I would be more into if I had more people playing it. Because I can just look over right now and see the little starships sitting on my shelf because they're too pretty to keep in the box.
And I've been wanting to take them to my office and put them out on my desk, but then I was like, what if something happens and they break and then I can't use them in the game? I have to keep them in the house.
I will say there's at least one or two of mine that have been super glued on a number of occasions.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. Well, you know what? I think that Armada might be one of those ones that we could potentially do as a shared game. You know, if we can
come. I challenge you to make that work.
We could, like, film it, like, set up the cameras and stuff. I mean, it might work. I don't know. It's a set piece, right?
I've been hard pressed to find a game that'll work. I mean, unless you want to do something like Tabletop Simulator or Tabletopia. I've actually had this conversation. I've had it with a number of guys over at Game Church. I actually just had it, speaking of TR, when I started talking about Arctic Scavengers. He's like, can I play this over Skype? And I go, there's just too many. You're pulling from the same piles. So you can't do it because you're pulling from the same pile.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
Do you have Armada, Daniel?
No, I've been playing with the idea of it, but it's just another miniatures game where I could put money elsewhere when it comes to...
Yeah, that's true.
Because
as much as I love having Armada, and as much as I'd said I would get way into it if I could, I would still swap what I have of Armada
for
Guild Ball. I would do it in a heartbeat.
And I'm this close to Sam, man. Maybe I should just buy him Guild Ball to get the Armada stuff.
I would find a way to ship that down there to you if I could get, because that game looks so absolutely flipping amazing. And they just came out with a character. I forget what the name of it. Cause again, I'm trying hard to not get myself too into it because I can't afford to get into it. But they just released one guy on the Mortician's Guild. Who literally summons a skeleton up from the ground and he just pops up. He's just half a guy. And he, you know, his ability actually pops the skeleton up off onto the field. I'm like, oh my goodness, I want that so bad. I would play Mortician's Guild just to play that guy.
Oh, just for that. Just for that.
That, and there was one of the guilds is called the Union. And one of the new Union players is a giant dude and a little dude who's riding on his shoulder. I'm like, oh my goodness, I want that in my life so bad.
Nice.
I'm dangerous. I really am. I'm still amazed at that I had the self-control to walk away while it was at Dreamation. I had the kickoff box literally in my hand, and I walked away because I'm a responsible adult. I hate myself for it.
As I sit over here and put together Blood Bowl miniatures.
Yeah, you're not a nice man. You're not a kind man.
No, I'm not.
No, you're not.
I try to be.
I vouch for that little theory right there, this guy.
But going back to Ashes, I'm super excited. I ended up sending in an email to the guys at Asmodee because I tweeted to Plaid Hat because Plaid Hat was announcing that they're doing a new big push kind of event called the War Within. And like every event that happens in stores, they're going to have these epic alternate art cards that you can get, play mats and stuff. And it's to promote the new expansions that are coming out for Ashes because the new expansions have new dice because Plaid Hat hates me. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at these new characters. I'm looking at these new dice and what they do and their decks. And I'm like, I just happen
really
to throw
new dice.
Oh yeah,
because I'm thinking about the sets of dice that they have in there now, and it's like, it seems like so well balanced. So what are they? Are they trying to help balance the game further because of the expansions?
No, it's just new dice. It's new types of dice.
Hmm. Okay.
Part of the reason is because it's a business model, and you need to keep giving people a reason to play to buy their new stuff.
And this is for the new Ashes game.
For the new expansions, yeah. The other reason is because of the fact that, like, I'm already running into it. If I right now, because of all the people that are local to me, I know of one guy who has Ashes. So that means if anybody's playing Ashes and that guy isn't there, it's my set and my set alone. There are certain characters that I can't play at the same time as others because I don't have the dice for them.
Yeah, you'd have to have the paired. Okay.
Rin uses all one type of dice. So all 10 of that type of dice, the natural dice, are for Rin. So if I'm playing Rin, I literally can't have my opponents play any other character that use natural dice. So the idea of putting more dice in also allows for more people to be able to play and have more variety.
I can buy that.
I'm still hoping I can convince more and more people to play. I worked hard to make my boy Jeremy buy that game because I really wanted to get into the deck building of Ashes and really build something unique and different, maybe even get three different types of dice into the one deck, really make something fascinating. It's just hard, though, when my set is literally the set. And so if anybody's playing, they want to be able to have a deck already made that is fully constructed and isn't like part of a couple different decks. They want to have a full thing. So I'm hoping I can get more and more people. I downright covet these stupid expansions. But I don't know. We'll see what happens. I tweeted, because everything happens on Twitter. Sure. I tweeted at Plaid Hat and I said, I know it's supposed to be only stores and we're not a retailer, but I wonder if Plaid Hat would be okay with this plucky little nonprofit running an Ashes War Within event. And they got back to me and said, we'll message you. And I got the message and it basically said, yeah, we're just the designers these days. We're not in charge of any of that stuff. So you got to get in touch with Asmodee. So I emailed Asmodee. We'll see.
All they can do is
say no.
Exactly.
This is when I say hashtag nonprofit life. I even said that to the guys at Plaid Hat. I'm no stranger to having to ask for stuff. I run a nonprofit. That's kind of my entire job. But yeah, especially because I'm gearing up for International Tabletop Day, where I'm going to be giving away a gift card to Cool Stuff. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about that and Tavern Con coming up in June. It's fun because I know a number of regulars, at least a couple, who have said that they're going to be at the Academy East for Game Church, which is the previous Sunday or previous Saturday to Tavern Con. So I know at least a couple people who have said, well, if I go to the Academy, I'll stay all week and then hang out and come to the tavern with you guys. I'm like, that sounds fantastic. So there's a lot of stuff going on. All I know is that I know for a fact that as much as I blather on about Kickstarters like Grim Forest and Rising Sun and all that, I know, Mr. Romo, that one has caught your attention. And I didn't have time to look at it before you sent it to me, or after you sent it to me and before we started recording, but all I saw was the name of it, and the name has me intrigued. So what is this Kickstarter you brought to our attention?
Well, I mean, come on, this is like a no-brainer for me. It was actually brought to my attention by one of Brent Brown's buddies on Twitter. It's one of the fellows that, I think his name's Ben. He's on the Heidi and Way podcast there, and he sent over a message saying, hey, I know you're a big fan of anything powered by the apocalypse. And I was like, yes I am. And he hefted me to a Kickstarter. It's already funded. In fact, it's actually, I think it's tripled its funding already, and its goal was only $3,000, because it's a small book publishing that's going to occur where a lot of this stuff is going to be digital. But it looks like they're going to be able to blow right past that and go into some really fantastic stuff. But it's called Noir World, and it is, as its name indicates, it is film noir, but it's powered by the apocalypse. And I love the title of this. It says, it's an RPG of emotion, tragedy, risk, and relationships. And if it didn't have the word noir in there, it would sound like this is like a run through of a small group gathering. You know, like here's the things that are involved with a small group. There are risks, there is emotion, there are tragedies because you share, and there's obviously the building of relationships. I was like, oh, it's like a small group. But then you add in noir and it's like, it takes it to a whole different level. It's like, okay, we're talking about something completely different. But yeah, it's powered by the apocalypse, so there's a lot of shared narrative here. And in fact, they've taken that to the next level, which is there's no true game master. It's and there's a few other games out there that have done this before, but in this case, it's that completely true blue shared narrative. You're creating this world of like a film noir where you have tragedies and you have elements of mystery and you have femme fatales and you have, you know, gravelly voiced private detectives and all that other stuff that goes on. But it's cool in that you can have it in any setting that you want. It could be, you know, 1920s, it could be the teens, it could be the 40s, which is like the primary source material. But it could go all the way up towards like a cyberpunk feel. So like you have your Blade Runner type thing going on. And it's really neat in that you have multiple classes that you can play. There's over 20 different roles that you can pick, what they would term like character classes. But the neat thing is that it starts off with like a base five, base six of these classes. You have a fatale, private eye, a dirty cop, clean cop, disgraced doctor, attorney. But then you start getting into more of what they call neo-noir roles. So it's like they kind of branch out and become a little bit more defined. But I haven't had a chance to listen to the full episode, but the group at the One Shot RPG podcast has put together a session using the Quick Starter set. And that the beginning of it, it sounds like a lot of fun. And it made me think about the game I shared with Bren Brown, Cthulhu Confidential. You know, it kind of took me into that little headspace right there. But I just love the idea of multiple people telling tales together. And yeah, there's some dice elements there to kind of, you know, let the randomness of life take hold. But in general, it's just, I love that experience. And as much as I love the Game Master and I love to develop worlds, that sort of thing, I am having my most fun when I'm letting the rest of the table create along with me. You've heard on recordings, I do that even with Dungeons & Dragons and other assess systems as well. But, you know, I've really found my home in games like Dungeon World or the next game that I want to run for En-ROADS, The Sprawl. So that's... yeah, so I'm definitely interested in it. The buy-in is really dirt cheap right now. I think right now the pledge levels, which is still going to be pledging for another, what do we got here, 28 days, and they're at over $10,500 of a $3,000 pledge goal. So they've made it. I think $1 you get a sincere thanks, but $15 you get the digital copy of the Noir World thing when it's finished, and then you get a quick start module right now so that you could actually try and test out the game as you see fit. $25 gets you physical, digital, and quick start. But then as you start advancing in levels, there's some kind of cool stuff that happens. Like for instance, there is this one I kind of like. For $75, you get the quick start guide, get the PDF, you get a physical copy. So great stuff there. But then you get to choose how you want to be immortalized as a corpse in an example in the text. So like, you know how like you have like your regular text in an RPG, but then you have like the box text for like examples and stuff. You get to be immortalized as a dead body somehow in the game. I was just like, oh my gosh, if I had $75 to spare, I would fling it across the internet at them just so that I could be immortalized like that.
I have a friend that's probably going to do that. He always, whenever there's a RPG up that that allows you to buy in to to the game, he does that. Mm-hmm. Like he's got a module of him in a Savage Worlds game in East Texas University.
Like he might go for the $100 thing there because you send in a photograph.
Yeah.
And then I shared with you guys on the screen. And if you guys want to go to the Kickstarter, just look for Noir World, N-O-I-R World. And the pictures that are there, you get this, you send in a copy of a physical picture of you or an actual picture of you, and they'll noirize you and put you into the game. So you're actually going to be in the game book, the finished book.
Yeah.
So he might go for that.
Yeah, I'm going to send that to him right now because if he
has $100 isn't terrible for something like that. $100 is not too bad.
Yeah. I have. I'm now imagining what I would look like noirized, as you call
right?
it.
Right. It's like that black and white feel, like the kind of like that Sin City type feel, you know, or the Dark Knight, where it's kind of like kind of blocky, but it's black and white. And you've got heavy shading. It's just black and white. There's not like any shades of gray. Oh, it sounds pretty incredible.
Okay, we need to go and double back to Daniel, because otherwise, if we dwell on this too long, I'm going to be sitting here trying to do my best Marv impersonation from SimCity.
Yeah.
SimCity.
It's kind of like last week how we were just sitting there, or last time we were, you know, listening over the other game. So.
Oh, I will still, to this day, there's still plenty of time left on Rising Sun.
Have you noticed the post I've been doing almost every day?
Oh, this is the same one. This is the same one that I have.
I entered into another contest, and then I found another contest.
It's the same contest.
I was at a 7-Eleven, and there was a scratcher, and I just wrote in Rising Sun, so I entered that too.
Pretty much, but it's the same contest every day. I get the new extra thing. So I'm.
No, I'm very much aware of that contest, and you know, I hope one of us gets it, because that would be fantastic. But that's enough about Rising Sun, Daniel. We teased it already. Yes. So, talk about the experience you're having.
So, like in the past, playing when not Ultimate Werewolf, the kids has always been fun because they really get into it, especially the preteens. But we had a mix. We had some little younger kids this time. And, you know, they just love it. When they vote, they're screaming and hollering and all those wonderful things. Well, when the youngest, who turns 5 tomorrow, looked at me today and said, "Is this the only game you brought?" And wow. I was like, yeah, I said, I figured everybody would enjoy it because, you know, we've had so much fun with it in the past and we only had an hour. And she's like, "Oh, can you bring other games next time?"
Dang.
Well, she obviously didn't.
Look, loser.
Yeah.
Okay. I just want more.
That's just cold.
Yeah, it's okay though. I mean, she's 5 and her favorite game right now is Pirate's Blast. So.
Okay, well, the second you say 5, yeah. 5 is that age where they don't really have a filter. They say exactly what
love
they're thinking.
Little fists on her hips, looking up at you saying, "Challenge me, old man, challenge me."
And I just looked down at her and I said, "Go eat another Oreo." So something interesting really happened tonight. Like, you can, in these deductive games, you can really start to tell, like, what type of person somebody is by the way they play. Like my daughter, for instance, she's very loud and she takes over the conversation. She takes it from me, actually. But she takes over the conversation. And so, like, she's the werewolf. She's quick to blame somebody else and raise that voice to try to influence other people. And just so she can win that round, you know, and that's just the way she is. But we had, you know, 2 kids tonight, one being my son and one being my pastor's oldest. Went and quit cheating. My son was doing it accidentally, and she was kind of doing it intentionally. And I, you know, it's funny. Like he would, you know, blurt something out when he didn't realize he wasn't supposed to blurt something out, and I would be like, "Well, that's, you don't know, but it's considered cheating. You're helping everybody else, you know, figure out what's going on." And with him, what I did, because he wasn't learning, because I had pointed that out like 10 times, you would sit him down and like, "Well, you can't play this round. You've got to sit down and let everybody else finish playing." But with,
I've had kids in the past that it's funny because they're now all adults that we're talking about now. But there was one kid who we literally, I had to mention him every time we played. This was regular werewolf, not one. Yeah. But I literally had to say to him, I told people, I go, "Look, you can't talk." Because there were on a number of occasions where I go, "Werewolves, who do you want to kill?" And he would go, "That guy." And I'm like, "Well, all right."
Well,
then.
Well, that's the thing though. Like, he'd get a card and be like, "I'm the seer." I'm like, "What? Why are you telling people that you're the seer?" But so.
Oh, see, I always learned to mess that up by saying I am.
And so, like, with her though, she was peeking. She would have a tendency to peek, or, you know, I was kind of reffing the game. I wasn't actually playing it. So I was running the little app to, you know, that does the werewolves, you know, look around and, trying to keep them all honest. But every time I caught her peeking or any type of cheating, I would stop the game and say, "All right, everybody, you know, so and so was looking and they were cheating. So therefore give me all your cards." And I had to reshuffle and redeal and start all over again. And they were getting tired of it. And, you know, they were not really ragging on her. It's like, "Man, I wish we wouldn't have to keep redealing and looking at her." you know, and things like that. And, you know, she was kind of towards the end feeling a little pressure from her younger siblings and my kids of stop looking.
Just don't cheat.
I mean, she was coming up with some very creative ways on how to do it. Like in one game, like when it said werewolves, you know, she waited a few minutes and one of her sisters had a werewolves card. She looked up, her sister did, and then she turned and looked directly at her sister. And then she kind of gave her sister the thumbs up like she was the other werewolf. And, oh. And, you know, I was like, So I did a little cheat of myself and switched her cards. And, you know, things like that. But you know, she wasn't the werewolf. As soon as they said, all right, start making your votes, she pointed her sister out and was like, my sister's the werewolf. You know, just started throwing that finger at her. And she's like, but you said you were a werewolf too, you know.
It's,
oh. It's kids, oh, man. Yeah, it's...
Well, we've kind of been there before, you know, and we're in a hobby such as ours, and you learn the rules, and sometimes learning those rules lends itself to not following them,
yeah.
I guess, because you learn them so well, you're like, oh, I know how to kind of cheat the system a little bit, you know, and you come up with power gamers, you know, like in role-playing games, but then there's also the thing like, you know, there's the physical cheating, like what you're talking about, where you're like, you know, looking and eyeballing. But then there's also like using the rules to kind of leverage the advantage.
Well, you're not going to get rid of people who work the rules, especially, you know, I mean, it could be, it's either a combination of somebody just really wants to make something happen. Like it's part of the reason why house rules happen is because you have people who you constantly are like, no, dude, that, I mean, yeah, technically that's in the rules, but are we really going to play that way? Because that makes everything terrible.
Well, I'm talking about and the that guys that play Marco Polo and hop out of the pool. You know, you can't catch me.
Yeah. But there, I mean, you're never going to stop. And the big thing is, I think the thing that separates this is that there's manipulating rules, which is, I mean, it's not great, but it's still within the bounds of legality. I mean, it's in there. You might be exploiting something, but you can't say it's wrong.
Yeah. Right.
And then there's people who go out of their way to actively kind of tank the purpose of the game.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm going on that.
Well, I mean, with kids, they're a good thing with playing with kids that I've learned is that you still have to be the adult. You could be having fun with them, but they're ruining it for other people, and so that. You know, since I'm in charge of them at that time, I have to put forth a punishment because I know it's not as bad as like hitting a sibling or something, but forcing a child to set out a game, you know, is going to teach them, hey, I can't enjoy myself with other people when I'm sitting over here in the corner while they're playing because I cheated. Right. And, you know, it's just, I don't want it to ruin the experience for other people. And, you know, it's part of the punishment. It's, has to be done sometimes, and it's interesting because if we were playing with adults, we wouldn't do that, you know. I think part of it's me being able to do that as an adult, but like if, you know, me and Mike were playing a game, I'm like, Mike, you cheated, you're gonna have to sit in a corner for a few minutes while I play with Jeff some more. Yeah.
No, what we do with adults who do that is that we just happen to neglect to invite them the next time game night happens.
Yeah. There's that.
Like it's not like there's no consequence. It's just a different, like, you can actually, like, do something about it right away when it's with a kid. It becomes a little bit more of a social minefield when that person is another adult who's doing this kind of shady stuff.
Yeah. I used to be really bad at cheating at Clue, but I'll just leave it there. My mom cheats like crazy. That's why I won't play games with her.
Well, it brings up the idea there's a couple things that we can talk about there because you're dealing – like I just had a conversation with a dad the other day. We were doing – our church is doing this whole missions month thing, and a lot of different churches will do that every once in a while when they want to take some time and set aside a lot of intention to talk about missions. And they're like, hey, you know, you should do – you know, be there for inroads. So I absolutely was. I was there with a table and our banner and all sorts of fun stuff. And I started talking to one of the guys who his kids are no longer in the youth group. They've all grown out of it. but his daughters were in my youth group for years. And so he and I got to be real close. And I basically talked to him about the idea that, one thing that games teach us is the ability to lose well, which I think is really important and a skill that is not actively being taught in a lot of places anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's something that, games allow us to do, because I think a lot of the reason why cheating happens is because people hate to lose.
Oh, yeah.
And you're never – I don't know anybody who likes to lose. Like, I've made it an art form of how to lose well, because I lose constantly. But while none of us like to lose, there's this idea of needing to be able to – lose and still enjoy yourself, to lose and understand that it's the process of the game, and there has to be a loser, and sometimes it's going to be you.
I think it's it really is a life skill. We always tell everybody, like kids, to be, oh, you need to be a good winner. You don't need to be rubbing it in and things like that. But we never teach our kids, you know, and it goes back to the conversation we had last time about kids crying when they lose. We never teach them how to lose, because we're always like, oh yeah, the winners are the best, blah, blah, blah. We don't teach them that, you know, as a loser, you know, you're learning something more important than winning, because at winning, you're just going to keep trying to do the same thing over and over and over again, because it got you that result beforehand. But at losing, you're like, okay, well, let's figure out why I lost and adjust my strategy and tweak it just a little bit. So maybe next time I won't lose. You know, and make a better strategy. I think that if you get someone that has lost a lot and has figured out how to start winning, then that's a more formidable player than someone who's just constantly won all the time.
Or they go and get steroids.
Yeah, that too. Or one of those bikes with the little motor built into the hub.
See here, like for me, and I think this is something that's kind of in our generation, like when we were kids, but for me, like, cheating was kind of cheating was kind of like a point where I hit the limit of my conscious ability and I didn't want to apply myself, like what you're talking about, Daniel. I didn't want to apply myself to learning it properly. And then came the advent of those walkthroughs, game walkthrough books. Mm-hmm. You know, and that, you know, you didn't have that when you had, like, the old Nintendo games and stuff, but then, like, slowly but surely, that was kind of like the birth of it. You know, you had the Nintendo magazine, and then they would have walkthroughs of particular areas of Super Mario or whatever. And then it just became like a whole industry thing. You'd get like, I've got the, it's culminated in the fact that I've gotten rid of all of them except for one. And that was the Skyrim book that came with like the big, you know, the big release. And
it disappeared in one of my moves, I think. One of the apartments I moved to. But I will tell you that at one point I had that book and it was a tome.
Yeah. And so it's like, I get the idea, like, especially when it comes to deductive games. I'm terrible at deductive games, which is really weird because I enjoy playing them to a certain extent. But if I'm just playing it by myself, I'm probably going to likely just find a way to get the answers so I can move along. Like, if I can't, I get stuck somewhere, I'm just going to find an answer and move along.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of where my cheating gene comes into play, is when I feel like I've hit the limit of my conscious, my mental ability, my capacity, and I'm like, I'm not going to learn this. I'm just going to move on.
I think video games have kind of ruined this a little bit, especially when we have cheat codes. You know,
ABBA
something. Well, I mean, with me, it's like, you know, I play, as I point out to you guys, almost, you know, weekly, I play a lot of Minecraft, and one of my favorite ways to play Minecraft is in hardcore mode, which means you die, you don't get to restart, you know, you have to create a new world and delete the old world. But
no way, I'd be so frustrated.
Yeah, I figured out how to cheat at that, and it ruined it for me. I'm just like, oh man, it's so frustrating, because it's like, one of the only video games I enjoy right now. And
well, I think that in and of itself, there's an interesting, like, that my amateur sociologist switch just got flipped, because in Minecraft, there's a creative mode and you physically cannot die in the creative mode.
So what you can do is in the hardcore mode, when you die, it gives you the option to delete world or spectate. You hit spectate, and then you hit escape and go to start a land world with the current world and turn cheats on, and then you can go in and respawn yourself.
Respawn.
But the thing that intrigues me is that if all you're looking for is how do I make this awesome thing without worrying about dying, and how do
creative
I
mode's
it,
great.
Make this awesome? Just do creative.
But that's not
mode.
What I'm trying to do. I'm trying to survive and build a thriving like farm and mine while fighting off zombies. And
there's a lot of value in that. There is a huge thing of value in that. As a guy, like I was literally just going to say that you know the false assumption when people play games with me is that they always come in thinking I'm great at them.
Yeah.
And I often. It's rare that I end up winning, because what happens is that everybody puts a target on me, and when everybody puts a target on me, I'm literally playing one on three or four at that point. So it's next to impossible, even when I do know what I'm doing. Yeah. But every time I lose, I'm learning new strategies. I'm learning a new perspective. I'm learning all this stuff. So that's how I always see it. So I'm all on the idea of getting that achievement and pushing forward to learning new stuff and learning new strats. I'm still trying to refine my Loki strategy when it comes to what's it called? Yeah. To Blood Rage, because that's my favorite strategy.
Hey, guess what? All roads in my head lead back to Dungeon World. And every time you fail, you get an XP point.
Exactly. There's lots of ways that failing can lead to that. But the second you're so concerned about the crossing that line rather than the achievement of actually getting there, you've literally, like, I've had this conversation with my wife a bunch of times, and I think she's starting to come around to the fact that there's value in the act of playing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a new thought process to her, because she never just let herself just enjoy a thing to enjoy it.
Mm.
So it was hard for her to grok this idea that gaming has value. And so I've been like, no, it's that you're learning and you're trying to come at things from different angles and all that stuff. The second you're more worried about winning a game than playing a game, you've ruined all that value of playing the game.
Mm-hmm. Finish the race.
Yeah.
Right. Finish
the race. You've removed that value. Because all it is like okay, yay, win, yay, who, like what it does nothing. It literally turns all the time and effort you put towards doing that into I checked a checkbox.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. Like with Paul saying, you know, finish the race. Yeah. You know, he knew all his problems and all the limited capacity that he had as a man, and the constant torture of a whatever nameless sin that he was always dealing with, that kind of represents all of the sins that we deal with on a daily basis. But the idea is that if you're just playing to eliminate the sin in your own life, you're losing out on the ability to help others with maybe in the same conundrum or in their own conundrums that you can help with. That's where your focus should be. So it's like you said, Mike, it's kind of like it's playing the game instead of trying to win it. You're in it to live it, right? You're in it to learn it. And that's actually a good parallel. I've never even thought about that with games. That's a good point, is that you can play to win and have some fun that night, and then you move on to the next game because you've won this last game.
Yeah.
But then if you're in it to actually learn and to enjoy the game and to be with people, you know, which is what we do, it makes a lot more of a parallel with real life.
I've seen where people, you know, dealing with the own sin in their life don't realize that God's preparing them for something. And I'll speak on this about myself a little bit. A lot of people don't know is I'm a recovering porn addict. I'll admit that. You know, and it's something I had to overcome. And it took a lot of time, different pieces of software on my computer, accountability, staying in the scripture, stuff like that. And I got past that. And, you know, I can sit around all day and be like, hey, you know, I don't have to look at this stuff and, you know, and all these things. But God prepared me for something when my pastor came to me and said, I've got a guy who needs your help because you've been through this. And turned that guy over to me, and I sat down to him and listened to him, and and told him what was going on. And I said, this is what you're feeling right now. And this is what you feel when you do this. And this is what you feel when you do that. He's like, how do you know this? I said, because I've been where you've been. And I said, I've gotten through there and you're going to get through there as well. And, you know, that's just some of the things that we have a tendency to forget is our job is to teach. Our job is to help. And with games, playing games with kids, you know, my job is to teach my kids how to play those games and how to be good losers and good winners and how to have fun and enjoy themselves. Just like my job as a Christian is to help my brothers and sisters overcome things that they themselves might be too weak or not know how to overcome.
The big thing that keeps resonating with my mind and even what we've been talking about is this idea that a lot of times people, when they think about Christianity, especially people who are outside the church looking in, they think of it about the morality. You do these things, you don't do these things, and that, you know, that makes you a good person. And there's a reason why, if that's all you know about the faith, is that it falls flat on its face. Because if that's all it is, then there's a number of things that I can say that are uncomfortable to people. If you're able to be a good enough person to do all the right things and not do the wrong things, then Christ didn't have to die and you're okay on your own. And I got the entirety of scripture that says that's a load of horse crap. The big thing about it is not just you tick the right boxes. And I think that a lot of the reason that there's so much crap and division right now, both within the church and with the church to other people, is that we're so concerned about ticking the boxes. We're so concerned about that moral win, quote unquote moral win, because a lot of times I don't even think it's moral. But we're so concerned about crossing that finish line and getting that moral victory that we can get up on a pulpit and say, isn't it awesome that we crushed culture and did this thing for Jesus? We're so worried about doing that we've completely alienated everyone who needs to hear the message that we have to give.
And they don't want
to
listen to us because of that alienation. I mean, I hear it all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's like this weird catch-22 for us in that we are called to call out sin, right? We're called to say, hey, you know, things are going wrong here. I want to help you, you know, and it's not easy to tell people they're wrong, right? It's not easy to tell people, hey, you're not coloring in the lines, you're not following the rules, that sort of thing. That becomes a very difficult message for us. And even when we eventually convince them that this is coming from a position of love. But if we're also doing that and we're being this way where we're pretending like we're not fallible and then we can handle it ourselves, that, you know, we can do whatever, makes the message that much harder to deliver. Because who wants to listen to somebody who's holier than thou? You know, and I'm using the air quotes for all you radio folk, but somebody who's holier than thou and then trying to tell you that you need to be better. It's like, I don't even want to listen to that, even though I know the person's probably right, because it's coming from a mouthpiece like that, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
It's our nature not to want to hear it.
And I think it, you know, to double back on the gaming illustration that we've been using, there's a difference between I'm doing this thing and either it's a subconscious thing and they don't realize they're doing it, or that sort of element that I'm manipulating things. It still needs to be called out, but I think it needs to be spoken of a lot easier when you're just like, it's on that subconscious level, like you're doing it wrong. I don't think you have it really nailed down. And then there's the people who are actively manipulating things to get their own ends.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is that like most things that are worth mentioning in Christianity, we always have to tie it back to Jesus and how he worked. When he hung out with people who, by all intents and purposes, like you can look back at all the scripture and all the scripture is saying these people are dirt. These people
are the worst.
They're unclean. You shouldn't be even near them, let alone hanging out with them. But every time Jesus was with them, he'd come up and he'd be like, no, you know, you do have sin, but I'm here to forgive you. I'm here to encourage you to move forward. Go and sin no more. Mm-hmm. It's the people who are like, I'm awesome. Yeah. I am God's man. And I am here to make sure that you do everything I tell you, because as God's man, it is my right. At that point, dude was just nailing those guys to the wall.
That was in my Bible study today, by the way. My personal Bible study was like, he was like, they accept me, you reject me, and yet you're God's called people. Yeah. So
he nailed those guys to a wall, and I think it's the same deal. But the problem is, I think more often than not, we switch it. I think we switch it. We're so hard on people who have nothing to do with the church, who have nothing to do with Christianity, and we're like, you people are the devil. And then we get within the church and we're like, oh, but they mean well. They really mean well. And I'm like, no, they don't. Yeah. No, they don't actually. And I'm not going to be one of those guys who calls out people on podcasts, because I don't have to. There are so many people out in the world right now who are doing stuff that I'm just like, look, guy, if you want to do your thing, that's fantastic, but you need to back the truck up when it comes to the way you're handling other people, because you're doing it poorly.
Yeah, there's a saying my boss told me called Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I'll let you figure that out. But anyway, so you know what's
Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
You know what's kind of funny is that, like, I love my wife so much. Sometimes, like, we'll come out of church and, like, it'll be like a particularly powerful message or whatever, and it's like really super serious, and then we know we got it. But then we like point at each other and we're like, I'm clean! I'm clean! Because we know we both got nailed, right? We both got nailed on something. And I think the thing is that when you're coming from a space of love, right?
Right.
It's so much easier to just call out somebody to say, hey, you're harming your life here. You know, there's a path that you're going down that's going to be really tough to come back from if you don't start changing your ways. And I'd love to help you with that, because I've been through it, or I know somebody who has, and we would love to talk with you. But if you're being, like you said, if you're being God's man or God's woman or God's dog, it's not going to work. It's not going to be effective. People just don't respond to it. And that's not what we should be about.
The big thing that comes to me is that idea that you were talking about when it is coming from a place of love, because there have been times when a buddy of mine at church, he's nailed me to the wall. And there are times when he's looking at me, goes, I think you're in a bad place right now. And I look at him, I go, no. And I'm like, here's why. I go, I understand why you're talking to me about this, but let me show you where I'm coming from. And he's been like, okay, I get that. That same guy has come up to me at different occasions and been like, dude, the heck is wrong with you right now? And I've been like, you're right. Mm-hmm. You're 100% right. In both those cases, I have the opportunity to just rail against him.
Sure.
In the one hand, it would have been like, how dare you? I'm not doing anything wrong. Whatever, whatever, whatever.
Nobody likes to be called out.
And even when I got called out, I could have been like, you jerk, why are you bringing that up right now? Why are you doing that? But in neither case did I do that, because I know that that dude absolutely loves me and wants to see me get closer to God. And when he's coming from that place, I understand that what he's saying is coming from a place that he wants me to be better.
Yeah, 100%.
And even when he wants to nail me to the wall, even when he's 100% right in doing so, I know that he's coming from a place that he loves me and wants me to draw closer to God. He's not there to manipulate the system. He's not there to score a win.
No, not at all.
He's not there to make me lose.
And if we're in that space of love, as both parties, we can acknowledge that.
Right.
Right? We can acknowledge that. If I know this person's coming at me, not as an enemy, but as somebody who loves me, or cares about me, I'm going to be less inclined to respond. Like you said, like, look, jerk, who do you think you are? You're coming at me like this? I just pulled up next to you in the parking lot, and you're telling me that I drive with my headlights on, and it's full daylight? I don't care who you think you are. right? You know, it's a lot less likely if it's like a buddy of yours and you're saying, hey, man, I notice you drive your headlights on and you're going to run out your battery one day. So, silly example, but
I think it's important to know how to lose.
Yep.
I think it's important to strive for the win, but know that I hate to be this trite, but it's true. Winning isn't everything. And in fact, more oftentimes I get more out of losing than I ever do winning. Because winning, all I did was execute. Yeah. Losing, you learn things.
I learned that as a very valuable lesson as a game master. That as soon as I learned to crush my darlings and love my players more, to see them succeed and to be a fan of the players, heck yeah, man. I'm not touting my skills at all, but I know that I personally became a better game master because of it. Because I was there to play the game. I wasn't there to win. I was here to be a fan of my players and to see them succeed. So it makes all the difference in games and in real life. 100%.
All right. I think that is a perfect place to wrap things up.
Rappity rap. Checkity check this yourself.
So Daniel, let's start with you. How can folks get in touch with you? What are you up to?
Well, they can email me at daniel.l.fisher@gmail.com. Sorry.
At profishingshop.com. Yeah,
profishingshop. No, I was going to give you my work email. You can get me there. Get me on Facebook. I'm thinking about to celebrate the birth of my new child in April. Hooray! Remember, people, I am poor. Because I do have another kid coming up. But I'll just let you know, I'm going to give some dice away.
Nice.
So, our listeners, I'm not going to post this anywhere else. If you email me free dice in the subject line and tell me in the letter why you deserve some free dice, I will put you into an Excel sheet to do a drawing with a random number generator to possibly give you a set of dice for free.
Look at you.
To celebrate the birth of my new child.
I love it. I love it. That's so good, man.
Mr. Romo, we'll go to you next because you got a bunch of stuff coming up.
I got grips of stuff. No, I've parsed it down so that I'm not... we had a conversation about this a couple days ago yesterday about doing too much and making sure that we do what we do well of the things that we do. So, but that means, you know, I've got a very solid plan for the rest of the year as far as RPGs go. So right now, if you're in the tavern, you may have seen me sneak in a preview post of the Sprawl. And I'm going to be doing some recruitment over the next couple of weeks, probably starting after this episode drops. So that Tuesday, look for some posts throughout the week in the tavern and I'll start recruiting for players in my... it's going to be a trilogy. Three episodes. One's going to be a session zero where we create everything together, and then sessions one and two are going to end up being, we'll just say session one is going to be create everything, session two we play, session three we play, and that's going to fill out basically one mission that we'll put into place. The Sprawl is a cyberpunk game. It's powered by the apocalypse. It's shared narrative. It's all the things that I love about a game, and that's going to be dropping in April. So we'll look for three rapid games, hopefully one week after the other. Maybe 2 hour sessions. We'll keep it around 2 to 3 hours, probably less than 3 hours, I would have to say. So that's the first one. So that's April. In May, I want to move into a Chinese motif, using Xin, the Warring States, which is, again, it's kind of a narrative driven game where you start kind of working your way into character creation based on a concept you have in your mind. And it's a lot of fun. It's based in 1200 BC. It's got a lot. The book itself is really good. It was on sale in drive-thru, so I just picked it up on a lark. And the book is super good because it actually has a lot of nice history in there. And then it merges it with some fantasy elements that are kind of on the periphery that you don't know much about. And then the last game is going to be an all-bards campaign in D&D. And I owe this one to TR Knight. And that's going to happen. So that's April is the Sprawl, May is Xin, and then in June we'll have April, May, June. Yeah, that's right. Calendars, everybody. That's going to be D&D 5e, all bards. Going to be a lot of fun. on that one. So whatever illusions you want to use, Josie and the Pussycats,
Backstreet Boys,
the Partridge Family, the Backstreet Boys, whatever.
I might have to get into this one.
It's I would. It's going to be a lot of fun. I definitely want to make it.
Fantasy Grounds?
No. Well, yeah. We could probably do that. So
June is going to be straight up crazy for me, but I know that I'm going to have to work in so that my boy Drogan is an NPC.
Oh, he's going to be there. He's definitely going to be there for sure. If you're not playing, then he's going to be one of the primary NPCs. Guaranteed. It's going to happen.
I can't, and I'll explain why when I start talking about what I've got coming up, but there's no way I can pull it off.
So yeah, so that's kind of my thing. I'm going to be moving it to a bi-weekly episode, but I'm using the Twitch channel on Tuesday nights to have RPG jam sessions where I sit down with folks talk about games for new GMs. Last week we had myself and Daniel talking about Fantasy Grounds. This last episode that we had, or the week before that was that, this last episode was me talking a little bit about GM prep. And then the upcoming episodes, we've got TR Knight, and then Daniel will be back for me as I do game setup for Roll20. So we've got some episodes lined up here going into the next month, but we're trying to leverage that Twitch channel a little bit more, so we're having fun with it.
Yeah, super excited about what's happening with the Twitch channel. I hope to see more and more stuff get, because we have it and we basically got it to experiment with. So it's nice to see that we're going to start really utilizing that thing.
For sure.
Well, for me, I'm running in a game day this Saturday. That's my usual monthly game day at my local church. I am running the next month. We actually have it scheduled on April 29th, which is the International Tabletop Day event. We've extended that one for an extra 2 hours. We're giving away a gift card to Cool Stuff Inc., a $25 gift card to Cool Stuff Inc. for somebody who comes out to that event. So we're super excited about that.
And I can't win this. Just let y'all know.
No, you can't. You cannot win this.
No.
I also have, I'm going to be the speaker at an upcoming event for Game Church, the Game Church Academy. And apparently it's popped up in the tavern that at least a handful of regulars are going to be at Game Church Academy East. So that's going to be awesome. Get to meet some of you guys in person. And then literally the following weekend after Game Church Academy is TavernCon. I'm super excited for this year. I'm hoping that we're going to be able to refine some stuff. I think I'm currently trying to get stuff in for donations for the raffle. I've been emailing everybody, every company who donated something last year. I'm emailing a couple new companies that I have contacts for that I didn't last year. And if you're listening and you're like, man, I really hope that I can do something to support Inroads. If you want to donate a game for us to raffle off, you can definitely send it to our PO box. Just make sure that you're letting me know that it's for the raffle. You can either email me that or just put it somewhere in the box that you're sending me. It's looking to be a great event. I definitely know that we're going to have folks from the Bodana group showing up this year. There's potentially another group that's going to come that isn't about gaming, but is definitely stuff that's close to what we do. And they have been to our events in the past. I actually have my copy of Freedom, the Underground Railroad, is signed by them because they do a lot of stuff against human trafficking and sex trafficking. So I have a signed copy of my love true edition of Freedom, the Underground Railroad. So they're potentially going to show up and hang out with us. I'm working on getting Jason Tagmeyer back. He hasn't promised me that it's coming, but I'm really trying to hope that he can do that. Super excited to see everybody that's coming out. And, it's going to be a great time. 10 hours of open gaming to raise support for the ministry that we do all year long. So I'm hoping it's going to be a lot of fun. All right, guys. Pretty much as always, we love hearing from you guys. I'm really going to push myself. It's already late, but I'm going to gun it for you guys because I'm late. I'm going to get Bard and Bible out literally tonight that we're recording this. And then next week is going to be when this episode of GSP hits. I'm super excited about what's going on with Bard and Bible. And, everybody who emailed me saying encouraging stuff about doing this podcast, thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it. And pretty much the regulars are what make all of this work worth it. And it makes all this stuff that we're doing. It's a lot of sweat and a lot of work, but you guys, the encouragement you guys give, it makes everything worthwhile. This is the part where I tell you, always remember, God is the game master. No matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.